Hello and welcome to Null Pointers. We are your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
So Stephen, it has been a while. So I remember once saying we were on summer vacation. I think that was like a private chat that we had. And the last episode that we recorded is actually February 2022. So I guess we could say life has happened. We're back outside. We still have these odd things in our drawers. I think they're called masks, which
maybe. I don't think I actually still have them.
No. I actually even got some of these quick tests that you can stick up your nose and check if you're positive or not. Which, to be honest, I found out on Christmas, last Christmas, that I'm positive. That was fun. So, I didn't see any family back then, but mainly because I was ill. And because you shouldn't see people when you're ill, you know? You just don't want to...
That's just common courtesy.
There are many bad Christmas gifts, but giving someone the flu, I think, is under the top five of the bad ones.
It definitely isn't. No. Yeah. I think all my tests expired.
Yeah, I don't know. I should have maybe checked if it actually was still valid. I never did. So it has been a while. We've actually been asked in person, like, are you guys coming back? And it was like, yeah, we're thinking about it. But, hey, look, we came back to the studio. There were some cobwebs, but we managed those. We definitely have to get a new TV. It used to be like the latest and greatest fancy thing up on the wall. It's good enough, but you know, it's not Null Pointer style. So, Steve, what have you been up to? I mean, these past years, so much has happened in the .NET space.
So
I don't
much
know
has
where
happened.
To start.
Let's start where I was actually at, because rumor has it I was actually abducted, and that's why we didn't record for 2 years.
Yeah, that's a good rumor.
I was abducted by a group of time-traveling llamas.
Oh.
I'm not going into that story. Maybe we should save that for another podcast. What's been up? Jeez, 2022.
Yeah,
it's like
long time
has flown by.
In 2022, there was a thing called Visual Studio for Mac. Do you remember that? Technically.
I remember it. I still use it, people will probably say, bad boy. You shouldn't be using it.
I don't know if they will say bad boy. I think they'll go like, really? You're the one?
Well, yeah, I'm the one that's keeping a whole industry sort of afloat until somewhere next year. I don't even remember.
I don't know. I think. Did they come out with an official date? I mean, I was a bit shocked, to be honest, because it was like, you're going to have XAML hot reload in Visual Studio for Mac. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm sure as next the C# hot reload will come. I mean, that's happened since then, right? I mean, everything in the UI front end has to be hot reloadable. If it's not hot reloadable, I'm just not bothered, actually. I mean, I've been spoiled by hot reload, like real bad.
It is definitely the case. I'm currently working on a Windows laptop, and for some reason, hot reload doesn't work. I have yet to dive into why it doesn't work. It is definitely, you miss it when you don't have it. That's definitely the case.
So I think the successor for Visual Studio for Mac is not Rider. It's not from Microsoft.
you're going to say Rider. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working like all the time on my Mac now. I even have changed devices since our last recording. So I used to be on an Intel-based Mac, and now it's on a M2 Max somewhat. I mean, it's nice.
Fancy
it's light. Nice. It's really sleek. So my company's really heavy into VMware, so I've got VMware Fusion to run my Windows desktop. I would say I've never had such a fast Windows laptop than the thing emulated on my M2, which is crazy. So, I mean...
Then this fake Windows.
It's fake Windows, yeah. Yeah. But it's super fast. I get all the hot reloads. I mean, so you get Visual Studio, you get it for ARM processed. It used to be a while it was emulated, so it was a bit laggy. But right now it runs like really nice and smooth. So if I wanted to, I could use Visual Studio for Windows, which is a nice dev experience. I mean, you get the hot reloads.
But you're saying if I wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to work on Windows, I would get myself a Windows laptop. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just that.
Yeah.
And And I think Parallels is the one where you even get like that fancy mode where you can have like the IDE like running as a native window, but the buttons are in the wrong place. Maybe they even fix that in the meantime. I don't know. I'm not using Parallels, but
it's been a while since I used that, and I faintly recall that at the time being quite resource intensive because it was doing all these fancy visuals things for integration purposes, I suppose. But it looks good.
I think it would be really. I should. If we got a listener using Parallels, I would be really interested in how that experience is for you. I mean, I remember like back in the day when I used to emulate Windows on my Mac, Intel Macs, it was slow. I mean, you could feel it, you know, like when you're typing and you always got like that mini lag that's driving you slowly crazy. And when someone comes up with an innocent question, you start shouting at them for no apparent reason because all that anger has been building up. That might be a me problem. Moving on.
Yeah, so you haven't fixed that in those 2 years? Jeez.
Well, yeah, I got an M2 Max. It solved all my problems. I really like these new ARM-based machines. For one, they're super powerful. So like, even if I develop natively on a Mac, which we can get to in a second, but I mean, that the battery lasts forever. I've given entire presentations, which go like an hour, and I had about 60% battery left, and I did the presentation, and I walked out of the room after an hour, and I still had like 40% left. And I'm not calling out for people to do this. This was not good from me for getting the power adapter in the speaker room, but you can do it. And I think it just shows, I mean, usually like when you present, you got like this big screen, so your graphics card has to work a bit harder for that. And then you do some code demo, so you got some compilation going on. It's not just like browsing the web and scrolling and doom scrolling. That's still a thing. I thought we left that behind the pandemic, but that's.
I've heard rumors that it's still a thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get sucked into it. But yeah, then my kids jump on my lap and they quickly snap me out of it.
That's good.
But yeah, you're actually talking to someone who doesn't have an ARM Mac. I just have like the Intel one still. But basically you're saying give that to your wife and buy a new one. That's
Well, it depends. I mean, if you like to have a warm lap, you might want to keep it. I mean, it's like the...
It does get a bit toasty.
Yeah, I mean, they do get warm. It's not... I think the M1 chips, they were like really cool and running. And I think the M2, they started to bring the heat up a bit. But yeah, I mean, I have heard the fans like a couple of times, like when you install some Node modules, that can be a thing. Or I remember like when you got like these ginormous solutions and the first time you start them up and all the code analyzers go crazy and all your CPUs are trying to figure out how this thing works, then you can hear the fan. But usually the fan that you're hearing is from your coworker having a Windows laptop that for no apparent reason is just going off on a haywire.
Yeah, I mean, I can't relate, except for the Windows machine that my wife owns, but that is, I don't know how she does it. She has a laptop that's a Windows thing. I think it's 10 years old. She only watches shows on it, and I'm like, why don't you just get a bigger tablet or something? Like, there's no reason this needs to be a laptop, but it's like an airplane is taking off. It's horrible.
It's insane. Yeah, just a word of advice. Don't touch the thing because it will be your fault if it breaks. Just say it went down that path.
I wouldn't mind if it breaks.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I told you I want to shift this one to the wife and then I can get an ARM Mac. So yeah. First the one needs to die. Like,
but have you heard that you can now get Windows laptops? I think there are not many out there yet, but they're also now ARM-based. So Intel brought out an ARM-based chip and the performance is quite decent. I think it's like on M2 levels. They haven't surpassed the M3s, which I think was one of the goals that some people are hoping for. But you can now get like these really slick Windows computers that have got good performance, because it used to be like with Intel chips, the heat used to be a problem, and so if you had like really small devices, they tend to have to run at slower speeds because of the heat, so that you can manage it. And so it seems like even on the Windows world, you actually very soon might be enjoying a lot more of these very powerful, power efficient, cool staying tiny devices. I think you can even get big ones with fans. If you, I mean, for big nostalgia ones. Reason, I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
I was about to say, who wants a big
blower,
one?
Leaf blower mode activated, and you'll just feel like at home.
Lovely, yeah. Lovely. But the thing is, like, I've been on Mac for a few years now, and I was honestly, when they gave me that Windows machine, I was struggling. I was like, why is this button doing? Oh yeah, it's Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that great. Sometimes. I mean, for me, it's like I sometimes have to work on a Windows machine or like remote into a Windows machine. And it's like you then have to switch back with all the keyboard shortcuts. And then I think like the worst thing is like if you've done it like for 2 hours and you're like back into Windows mode with your brain, and then you go back to your Mac and it's like, oh my God.
I can't handle this.
I'm on the wrong OS. But yeah, I mean, people say it keeps you young. So. Might be good things.
I was about to say I'm getting too old for this, but yeah, you're saying it keeps me young. Okay, then I must buy Windows.
Must buy Windows. Another thing that has happened is so since Visual Studio for Mac is no more, there is of course the alternative from JetBrains Rider. I don't know. Have you used that Rider?
I have not. Oh. I've been. Putting it off, I suppose, to start using it. Also because, yeah, I'm so hooked to my little Visual Studio for Mac that I can't say goodbye yet. But then again, I've tried Visual Studio Code, and that works to an extent. But surely don't expect all the whistles and bells yet.
I'm curious where that will go with Visual Studio Code. I think the nice thing about Visual Studio Code is it runs literally everywhere. I mean, you can run Visual Studio Code in the browser if you want to. Not every plugin will run in the browser. I mean, they got like this. If you get like into the architecture, they got like these fancy things where they'll spin up a little server then that your Visual Studio somehow talks to, and they do then like the IntelliSense for you and stuff like that. Well, that's how it used to be done. And now Microsoft has stepped up their game, it seems like, with Visual Studio Code, and they're bringing in these plugins for C# and .NET, and you even get a solution explorer now in Visual Studio Code, and you can develop .NET MAUI. So I've been giving it a spin, mainly just to try it out, because I like to have options. And I mean, I've been using Rider very heavily on the Mac, to be honest. As a Microsoft MVP, you get a free license. I might also have to put that out there. It's not that...
What?
I'm not getting paid by JetBrains to tell you
why
that
am I putting this off?
Rider, but I also didn't pay for the product. So, but if you haven't done so far and you're on a Mac, I think you can also get a trial version, and you can get the previews, which also run, I think, for free. Don't quote me on that, but yeah, I think it's for me. It was like I've been back in the old days when I've been using Windows. I also was using a ReSharper, also a product from JetBrains, which you could install with Visual Studio. And I think the downside of that thing was it made your dev device a bit more sluggish at some points, but it also, it was like this trade-off, like it runs a bit slower, but you get like these awesome refactoring features. And then Visual Studio started to implement these refactoring features on Windows. And then there came the point where I said like, yeah, I don't need this. But there were some additions like the test run and stuff like that, which I really missed a bit. Yep. Visual Studio, I just got like used to this way how it was done in ReSharper. And with Rider, you get like all your ReSharper tools baked in IDE, and it's not sluggish. They somehow, I think because it's like all their product, they managed to break out of some, I don't know, limitations that they had as a plugin on Visual Studio. Guessing here, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's been quite fast. I wouldn't say it's like the best IDE on the world. I mean, sure, it's got some of its shortcomings, but they have recently done a redesign, so it looks a lot more slick. It used to be like by engineers for engineers, I like to say, because you had like menus everywhere, and they
designed by developers.
Yeah, for developers. No, but I mean, it was like, where is this thing? And then you knew where it was, and it was fine. But now they really clean it up, so I like the new look, I must say.
If it's designed, I need to be there. I need to go get it.
But especially, you should definitely give it a spin. I mean, yeah, it's got some nice features in there. You get also...
I'm going to have to.
Yeah.
Like, there comes a day where my baby Visual Studio for Mac is just going to be gone. So...
Yeah. And I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe Visual Studio Code. I mean, it takes time, right, to do these things.
Yeah.
And I just hope that with Visual Studio Code, the success will be more there for the team, because I think it was always a bit tough for Visual Studio for Mac, because there was always this lag between Visual Studio for Mac and Visual Studio for Windows. And I think like the team could never be good enough. I mean, you would have literally had to clone Visual Studio for Windows to Mac, and then people would have been like, yeah, now we can start talking. It's like,
yeah, and it feels a bit like it kind of like evolved out of, what was it, MonaDevelop and all that kind of stuff. Like a sort of purpose-built IDE for Xamarin / MAUI, and then it was pulled into a bigger ecosystem where it needed to be more. And yeah, I can imagine that now that you're going back into Visual Studio Code again, you can just focus on your little MAUI bit, and then all the other stuff is taken care of by like other teams and other people. It feels like it has potential, definitely. I mean, like you said, it runs everywhere. I can just pop it open. It's super fast, in my opinion, so far. But it does need to have like all the first class tools that you mentioned, like Hot Reload and you name it. If that isn't there, then yeah, it's a step backwards, obviously.
I must say, like, I think Hot Reload currently in Visual Studio for Code is not there yet. There are the open source alternatives from the community, which I think we should point out. Plugins that you can install. Meteor is one that comes to mind, which like steps into where there's still some shortcomings. Another one is MAUI Reactor is another one. That's a bit completely different though than because there you actually have got you also have got Hot Reload. It works on Mac in Visual Studio for Go, but it's an MVU approach. So if you've been doing MAUI, I've been doing a few talks about this actually. So
I've seen one of those, I think.
Yeah, maybe in Cologne. Yeah, that was at the Donne MAUI Day. I was able to give an introduction to this. So it's the MVU star, so it's less, so you don't really use any XAML usually in that approach. It's more like Swift UI, if you want to say so. So it's sleeker in some respect. And there is a way how they do Hot Reload with that. So it has got some limitations, I've noticed. Like if you got some attributes that do this code generation things, which has been introduced to C#, that seems to then really fall apart if you start using that. But other than that, you get like, you write C# code, which is really nicely tersely done. Shout out to Adolfo, I guess, at this point, because he's like the main maintainer of this repository, and he's really done a really nice job. I think it's like this really nice way how you can write compact UIs using C#, and you get a Hot Reload experience. So you can like add a button, add functionality, add the logic behind the view, and it will just Hot Reload your stuff. And I've just noticed, like, I've been also doing a bit of web development lately, like web front end. I'm like probably the worst web front end developer. I'm like not even junior level, just to be honest. But you do get Hot Reload, and once you've been down that path of Hot Reload, if you don't have it anymore, you just feel like two arms tied behind your back and you're trying to code using your nose or something.
I've dabbled in some React a while ago, and it's just like everything you type and save, it's immediately there, and it's just, I don't want to go back to the days where I had to hit play and then wait for 2 minutes and hopefully it did what it was supposed to do. Those days are hopefully far behind us.
I hope so too. But I mean, on the other hand, I mean, if you look at websites, I mean, the Hot Reload there, I think is a lot easier to do, right? I mean, you got like, you have the browser, which is presenting your stuff anyway. So if you got your files and you somehow manage to trigger the reload or some stuff like that, the browser will be pretty quick. And I think if you look at a mobile application or a native application, you got a lot more going on. Because usually the UI layer is not just a text file. I mean, sure you can stand back and just say, well, that's maybe just a poor architectural decision that they make there. But I've been like really astonished how nimble it is to do these UI changes in .NET MAUI. I mean, if you think about how much shifting used to be done, like if you did it like totally like compile everything native, That was insane. I mean, how quickly it's been done now, like with these hot reloads, not only XAML, but you can also do like C# on Visual Studio for Windows. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And I mean, like the worst thing that can happen, I always say, is like you do too much. And then the compiler just says, well, I can't hot reload that for you, but I can compile
this
it
is a bit
you.
Overkill.
And that's also been like greatly improved from the speed size. I mean, I don't know if it's my new Mac.
Look at me in my M2.
It could be my M2, you know, just saying. Yeah. You know, just saying, old chapa. But honestly, I think it's... there have been a lot of improvements around the tooling for these mobile spaces.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, I think moving forward, like we said, that kind of needs to happen. Because without it, it just... The dev experience just devolves into something that you don't want to go to, and that's where that ends. So the whole .NET Meteor, I haven't tried it too much. That's the other thing you mentioned. That also gives you like all the IntelliSense for XAML and all sorts of additional, I think Blazor support is also in there. And your darling F#, I believe, if I'm not completely mistaken. There's definitely a few things out there to sort of cover that gap until maybe Microsoft adds all that themselves, or maybe they won't and they will just say, use this, it's already there, it's great. But I kind of think they need to plug those holes themselves as well, moving forward at least.
Yeah, I think that is, I think that's the question, right? I mean, where we go from here on out? I know like we're recording this at the end of February, and usually around April, May, there is this large conference by Microsoft, the Build Conference. So I would be interested on what there will be, or if they're showing anything there, how the strategy is going forward. Right now, I must say, if you're on a Mac, you still have options. So you could still use Visual Studio for Mac. It's mainly like in please don't die mode, I guess. I don't think any new features are being added to that,
doubt it.
You got alternatives, and I think Visual Studio for Code is a cool alternative because it feels super lightweight. I also miss some things, like I must say I was like really surprised when I initially tried it out, because I remember doing some .NET stuff a few years back, and you were like going into the terminal to do stuff, and now it was just like install the plugins, and then you can do a lot more like by clicking around in the UI. Given, I mean, like Visual Studio Code, it's a bit limited from what you can do, but Maddie from the I think the Visual Studio team, Maddie Montekila, check her out on social media. She gave me the tip like, you go like on the bottom right, you got like these tiny braces, and if you click on them, you actually can select your deployment platform and all that stuff. So you get a lot of stuff in there, and I think like if you initially try it out, it's like, oh my god, this, it doesn't even have that. And in my case, it was just like, I just did not know where to click.
Get that a lot, with Visual Studio Code at least. They're like, there's a few small bits and bobs where you can click and do a lot of things. And there's obviously the command thing on the top where a lot of stuff hides out. But you just have to know about it. Like, what do I type here to do the thing that I want to do? But I also agree. It's definitely adding some more things left and right sneakily. And I think also, like, because it's very plugin based, obviously, like plugins, I believe, can make this entire new tab on the left to do all their stuff in. So maybe at some point we'll have an abundance of tabs on the left where we can do all our things. But for now, it's starting to get there.
So I think some of the plugins are also, you have to have a Visual Studio license for them. So it does seem that there is... it's also like closed source a few of the parts. So what I'm trying to get at is there also seems to be some funding behind it, because if you make stuff closed source and you require license for certain features, that means People can also vote with their money. Like if you have a Visual Studio subscription, you can use it. Like, I guess pretty much like you got it included. But you could also make them the shift over or use it more. And I just know like whenever I talk with someone from the Visual Studio team, they're always very keen on feedback. I think that's like something that really helps them also like steer their priorities. And I've never met them like saying like, no, we don't want to do that. I'm sure like if you come up with some extravaganza idea, like I would like to have a free donut machine built into Visual Studio, they might not tell you now, but they might tell you that it's not super high on their priority list. Perhaps. I never asked them for that, so I actually don't know the answer. But what I'm trying to get at is that they're always super nice, and they always try to understand from where you're coming from. And I think like if you got a good case and it makes sense, they will also like ask other people what their opinion is about that. And yeah, I think that's one way how you can do it. But I still think like .dot Visual Studio Code, if you compare it to Visual Studio .net for Windows, I mean it's they're like on different planes. Yeah. It's totally different. I mean Visual Studio
there's something is else.
Hands down a lot more sophisticated. And even if you look like Visual Studio for Mac compared to Visual Studio Code, it's not on par. I mean Visual Studio Code still has to get some catch up to do even to Visual Studio for Mac. But I would hope that since the effort that they put into Visual Studio Code will not only show on Mac, but also on Linux and Windows, it will get more traction. That's like what I would be hoping for. So we would have, again, a good first-party alternative on Mac, so we don't have to boot up our Windows VMs, which is cool, but yeah.
No. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. I was just about to look up really quickly here what the actual retirement for Visual Studio for Mac was, and that was August 31st of this year. Then it's scheduled for retirement. So yeah, that is about half a year from now.
For all you that are joining us with audio, which is usually the case with a podcast, and no, we do not record video, there is some nervous head scratching going on Stephen's end after he wrote that date. So,
yeah, it's like, oh God. But Mark has given me the glorious opportunity to go check out Rider.
Yeah, if you're on Mac, definitely do that. Another thing that has really had a huge impact on, I think, many developers and many IDEs is having a co-pilot join you while developing.
Oh, let's not even go there. Like that thing creeps me out from time to time.
you mean we should save that one for an entirely other show? I think we could make a show about AI. I mean, we wouldn't be the first,
probably
not the last podcast doing that. No, but I think we can just really quickly touch on this because there used to be. I remember like when Copilot came out, it was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And since they now have lately upgraded to GPT-4, and you got like a chat-based interface with it. So it used to be only like super smart IntelliSense, so you could like write some comments, and then it might write some code. It might not write some code. It might write good code. It might write something completely not what you want to.
Yeah. I've dabbled with it, obviously, and I just needed something really quickly done, and I just typed out, this is roughly what I need, give it to me. And it gave me something that was very, very serviceable. It needed a few manual adjustments from my end, but that was more because I wanted to do things a bit differently. But yeah, the things that thing can do is creepy. Also touching on ChatGPT itself, there are also moments where I'm like, no, mate, this is not it. This is completely not doing what I'm telling you it's supposed to be doing. And then it starts improving. I'm making air quotes now. The thing, and it just goes further and further away from what I'm actually looking for. So there's a few good years left in us before the robot overlords take over, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you nailed it on the head there, Stephen. There is some moments when I really thought like, I just saved myself like 2 hours of coding, because the thing that it just did was so good, or like so close enough, and sometimes it was just like so wrong. I just gave up and then did something myself. I mean, the other thing that I started to do is, especially when you got like, so we at work, we try to enhance our test coverage, not just for the cases that it's like a nice metric. My company isn't large enough, so we don't do enterprise metrics, but so sometimes when you write some code and you then you notice that you're still missing some test cases, or you added a new method, and I've been doing that lately, where I just go like to GitHub Copilot and I put in again a disclaimer: as Microsoft MVPs, we get a free subscription to GitHub Copilot. GitHub does not know that we're talking about it right now, nor did they ask us to talk about it directly.
Please don't send them our way.
Yeah, thank you. No, but what you can do is with GitHub Copilot in the chat, you can say like, could you write me a test for this method, or could you write some tests for this method? And what I really like about it is, so it analyzes your project. This is, some people get really freaked out about this, I know, but so it will then know like, oh, you're using XUnit, so I'll write the tests using XUnit. So you don't have to like, oh, well, thank you for writing these tests in MS tests, and I'll just have to rewrite all the attributes and the asserts so they actually work. So it does that. Sometimes it even notices your style, how you write the tests, and it will adopt it. I don't know when it does that, because it's like real hit and miss for me. But anyhow, sure. So I get like these tests, and they then test like a lot of these different cases. Sometimes as a developer, we test the happy path in the unit test, and there's also like the not so happy path. And I have the feeling like when you ask Copilot, it just generates also those unhappy code path tests, and you can then, like as you said, you can then skim through them and correct them where not. So I've also been using it for those scenarios where I just like have some dull code, or you got like some view model that does some very basic assertion that the input is correct, and wouldn't it be nice if we could have like some test cases for that? And for those scenarios, as I said, I use them, and I might add, writing the test, I even found certain bugs for the code that I previously wrote. So,
well, I mean,
that's why you write them, right?
It's helped you already then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely those, I wouldn't want to say boring, because maybe then I'm insulting someone who really likes tests and writing them. But like some of those things you don't want to have to type out, I suppose, is the thing. Code that is just repetitive, mappings, tests, like that kind of stuff. It's really useful for that. You just give it like a class object, and then you say, do something with this class object, map it to this other class object, and it writes you the whole thing, and it mostly understands what it's supposed to do. Always.
I think there's like this, I think we could really do maybe a follow-up session going only on the AI, but I've been also noticing like I've already previously established my limited knowledge in JavaScript. Very, very limited knowledge. So no, I know some areas. I know enough to get me into trouble. Let's just put it like that. But there's sometimes like when you're new to something, you see like some code on the screen, and you go like, I got no idea what this is. I don't even know how I would ask Google what I'm just looking at.
What I'm looking at here.
Yeah. And yeah. For those scenarios, I really like, so you can go like to Copilot and can say like, what is this? And then it will try to explain it to you. And if you don't trust AI, you at least now know what you should hammer into Google to like get into the like more theory, or like Microsoft Learn things, where you can then read up on the things and go like, ah.
I typically give like ChatGPT a snippet and then say, please make a C# equivalent of this, and then I'll do an attempt to understand it a bit more than what I'm actually looking at. So that is definitely a very useful tool for that kind of stuff. But yeah, like I said, there are just a bit too many scenarios where it drifts away from what you're supposed to do. So it's really handy for certain scenarios, and that's, I guess, the core of this don't use it for everything, because you will write some pretty gnarly stuff. Just don't.
Yeah, know the limits. I think it's really that. I think it's also not, I mean, even if you don't know how to code, Copilot won't make you a developer overnight. I think you still have to like invest in the basics, like really know and understand like how something works. So what I'm trying to say is like if I would have to do now a lot more web front end development, I would still invest my time into learning the skills, like I would learn how JavaScript works from the bottom up. I would pretty much invest time into TypeScript because that's just there today on the web front end stack. And also, like depending on the framework that you're using on the front end, that time is still quite well spent. But on the same time, I would still while I'm learning, I would still use these Copilot things as a crutch. To help me along and like also help me with some mundane tasks. I also think it's like really depending on what task you do. Like some pieces Copilot will just excel at. Like if you're doing JavaScript, HTML, stuff like that, it's you can just see it's seen a lot of those scenarios and it can really help you. Same goes like with C#. If you're doing like SAML stuff, or I also noticed like if you do .NET MAUI, it's like the hit miss is that the miss rates are starting to increase.
Yeah, it increases definitely.
Yeah, definitely. So
it's just too specific at this point, I guess, where it just doesn't have enough training data on that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I would assume at least.
Yeah, it's probably is one of those cases. I mean, the if you just think about the amount of information that has been fed into these models that they get this good. There's some fun ways I can still improve them, but I think there's still some way to be gone. But that might be also like something that will become in the future, that you get like these plugins for your Copilots that will then enhance them in certain areas. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think with AI, it's always kind of the matter at this point, it's the worst it's going to be. Like it's only going to get better at this kind of stuff. The more we train it and make new models, and like I don't think we're going to go backwards in that sense.
Fair point, Stephen. I think this technology is here to stay. I don't think it will go away. I mean, some people wish it would somehow go away. I think there's also like some abuse going on, how the technology is being used, or like people like not wanting to invest any time into learning how to, I don't know, do C# developments, and just like saying, well, I'll just ask ChatGPT, and if I'm doing a code review, I'll just ask ChatGPT what the inputs would be, or if this code could be simplified or stuff like that. And yeah, it's just like, it's not. I think we're not yet there that we have AI coding overlords. But maybe in the future,
give it a few years.
Moderations until we're there.
Yeah, and those human moderations will train it further, and then we're done, basically.
Yep. Time to get that Skynet domain up and running again. And on this sad note, I think this ends the show. Nah. I'm sure AI will be here to stay, as we said. I think we're here for the ride. So stay tuned for our next episode of Null Pointers. Yeah, like and subscribe, hit that bing. This is not a YouTube video, is it? No.
Doesn't matter. Bings everywhere that you can hit.
You can hit the imaginary bing button. We'll thank you imaginarily for it.